Red sky at night, not a delight for the dinosaurs. As all the dust flew up into the air and blocked out the sun.
But the newly evolved shepherds.
Okay, this is great.
This is thrilling.
Last, our sheep.
All we need now are
eaten.
Sheep to evolve.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward. I'm Ben van der Velde. Each week in this podcast, we pick the best of the worst. When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight burns my retinas with infrared and ultraviolet radiation, so I'm momentarily blinded, and something, without warning, love, it sits on my head. It's a bear. The bears are heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's a light for me. Because you're on fire, and there's a 10-foot grizzly bear sitting on my face. Just one look at you, and I know it's going to be a really nasty day. And with me...
Nasty day.
You can hear my lovely backing singer and the withered bill to my Bill Withers. It's Barry McStay.
Thanks, mate. That's a name that should have been changed, isn't it?
What, Bill Withers?
Bill Withers.
Oh, it's one of the greatest jokes of all time. How do you turn a duck into a soul singer? Stick it in an oven till it's Bill Withers.
Is it one of the great jokes of all time?
No, but it's one, if someone goes, tell us a joke, and I can't be asked to go, give me a stage and some lights and an audience, then I'll give them that one.
Is that what you do at, like, see when people say, you're a comedian, that's your go-to?
So
have you had that happen to you?
Lots of times. It depends. I'll either give them a Carrie Delaney joke, credited, because I'm not an arsehole, or I'll tell them a shit old joke of my dad's, or if they seem genuinely interested, I will bore them to tears with what life as a comedian is like. A previous guest on the show, Kiri Pritchard McLean, wrote about this over the weekend on social media.
Oh, yeah.
She said that the joy and delight she feels in the moment of being on stage as a comedian is inversely proportional to how she feels when someone asks what it's like being a comedian. My favourite one, which maybe you get as an actor, but I got it the weekend after a gig. I just hosted a gig. And I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I was pretty consistently funny for an hour or so.
Yeah.
And at the end, an audience member came up to me and said, oh, that was really great. And what do you do for a living during the day? What do you think I do, dickhead?
You think, that's it, when they think you're volunteers.
Yeah, I'm the dad's army of comedy.
I was in a show once and we had a Q&A afterwards and not very many people turned up in the audience. And it was a kind of hard-hitting political thing in a little fringe theatre venue. And there were a few questions about the subject of the show, and then this one audience member put up her hand and said, and there are about 12 of us in the cast, she said, I just want to know what each of you does for money. So we had to go through one after another going, I'm a children's party entertainer. I work in a call centre.
It was the mum of the audience going, yeah. You all seem very lovely, but I'm worried about you.
Well, you've heard the voice of our guest. Our guest today is an actor and storyteller whose work in television takes on TV staples like Hollyoaks and Doctors, and as well as adverts for Lidl and Schweppes. But he's likely best known for his voice, lucky for an audio medium like ours. He's the star of the podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats, where he plays Rudyard Funn of Funn Funerals, once the only funeral directors on the island of Piffling, but now rivals of the insanely charming and audibly handsome Eric Chapman, played by previous podcast Tom Crowley. He is also, alongside a raft of previous guests of ours, including Tom, John Henry Fall and Richard Soames, a performer for History Bombs, purveyors of BAFTA award-winning history videos for schools. So, in the latest in our range of well-spoken, well-educated white male guests, to stave off a depressing Monday, our guest is the happiest of depressions, Felix Trench.
Hello.
Well done.
Thank you. You're right, Tom is audibly handsome.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
Listen to him and go, that's a man with a beard and cheekbones right
there. Yeah, he's got a real sort of oak-panelled voice, doesn't he?
He does.
You could sit down in it with a whiskey.
Yeah. You could.
A leather-bound book.
I sort of feel like Tom's voice suggests that he always has a red velvet rope that he carries around with him everywhere to surround himself with.
It's like a nice car before Wi-Fi became a thing in nice cars.
You'd only drive him with driving gloves.
Yeah.
although your own voice, if anyone that hasn't listened to Wooden Overcoats, by the way, we highly recommend it. Your voice is extraordinarily resonant. You're a very soft-spoken person, but Rudyard is properly... highly strong.
he is highly strong. One of our producers, Andy, he told me once that when he's asked what it's like having me in the studio, he goes, "Felix is a very dynamic person," which in audio terms means I go between very loud and very soft with nothing in the centre, which is really irritating to any audio producer.
Yeah, we're both looking forward to editing this episode at the end.
I will be shouting.
Good. I did suggest when we were going to have Felix on, do you want to do World's Worst Funeral? He said, I know shockingly little about funerals for somebody who does a podcast about funerals.
Yeah, all of that's... Well, David kind of took care of all of that.
Yeah.
And
you and Tom suggested the premise.
Yes,
of the show, yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, the kind of story behind it is that I was looking for a thing for Tom and me to work on because we were at sort of similar points in our careers. And I started with... the word rival, and then kind of went through professions until I found a funny one. Firefighters was also a possible...
Rival firefighters.
Yeah.
Showing up at the same fire.
Yeah. Maybe like two bands of them. Like setting fire to each other's truck and...
Yeah.
To spend all the time spraying each other down with hoses.
Yeah. Imagine kind of black and white film.
Coming to blows with fire axes. That's right. Yeah, although funeral homes is an excellent premise, and particularly on an island where you're all trapped.
That all came later. That was all David. Yeah. Like, our idea was very much more slapstick and more Jack Lemmon Walter Matthau.
Yeah.
People sabotaging each other, and we thought that it would probably be a period thing. And
yeah.
David's very much the one who then came in and went, no, we're going to make it about people. We're going to make it about relationships. Yeah, and then it all kind of expanded from David's own imagination. He grew up on an island. He grew up on Portsmouth.
Oh, did he? Is Portsmouth an island?
It's the biggest city island in the country.
Is it?
I described that very badly, but that's...
Take your word for it. I mean, I've asked, is Portsmouth an island many times? And
really? Sorry, because I'm not from here, and every now and again a bit of geography that flummoxes me when I come to
the UK. It's weird. It's if you go down to the south coast, you've got the Isle of Wight, and then Portsmouth is like a tiny Isle of Wight tribute act.
Ah.
And there's a...
the Isle of Wight Festival, and then the Portsmouth Festival.
Yeah, that's
the
where
tribute
all...
tribute acts.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that's how they market it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't afford a holiday in the Isle of Wight.
Come to Portsmouth.
Come to Portsmouth and get punched in the face by a member of HMS Navy.
HMS Navy?
Isn't that Her Majesty's Navy? No, what does HMS stand for?
Her Majesty's Ship.
Her Majesty's Ship
so
Navy.
So she's got a ship that's called Navy.
But that's a great
send for the Navy.
For
just one ship shows up. Oh, hang on. There's a sea. You meant the entire Navy. I see what we've done here.
Maybe it's because it's a shade of blue. Maybe each of the new boats is a different shade of blue.
Oh, well, yeah, that's good.
Navy,
HMS Royal,
Aquamarine, Duck Egg.
HMS Duck Egg.
Yeah, it's got a very thin hull, sadly. Just spills Yoko into the bay.
We always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world, Felix. What are you worst at?
I think I might be the world's worst vegetarian, because I'm not a vegetarian. But I have frequently been told by people come up to me and they say, "You're a vegetarian, aren't you?"
So you just assume.
Yeah, you have an aura of a vegetarian.
There's something very vegetarian about me. There was definitely a year when I must have been about 20, I was at university, and I did vegetarian lunches because at the time I had a vegetarian girlfriend.
Right.
I thought, well, she'll probably like that, and it's really no hardship when you're a student. And you've got meat coming in the evening anyway. Lovely bowl of mince in the fridge. But I remember her once telling me, she was very congratulatory and said, "I think you've probably saved a whole cow by now."
Oh, wow. Good. And so you went out and killed a cow just to make up for it.
Yeah.
went on a cow-killing spree.
Killed two.
Oh, just to get yourself in credit.
Yeah.
Do people just assume you're... Because I think people assume with actors and creatives that maybe we're a little bit more veggie and vegan.
Into that sort of thing. I guess, maybe.
Yeah. Or is the fact that you play as sort of a pasty wooden undertaker?
I play an audio non-handsome man. With sallow, drippy skin, candle wax.
Whereas Ben and I are having sit at a great distance from Felix for fear that we will just jump on him. He is like a Nordic god among us today.
Fair enough.
now we know what you're worst at, we need to get into the meat of things.
We do.
Hey!
Like, award-winning, Link.
Thank you.
Award-winning. So, this week's topic is pretty goddamn broad. We've got a lot to choose from. Because, thanks to Felix, we're going to talk about the world's worst day. Now, bearing in mind that the universe has existed for over 14 billion years.
Sorry.
You just can't get the Jesuit schooling out of a boy, can you?
Sorry, I'm just, for our many thousands of Christian evangelical listeners, that hasn't alienated over the past 50-odd episodes.
Yes.
They're on the side of the Jews. They want me to return to Israel, so it's a coming sign of the apocalypse.
True. No, we do have a wide number of days to choose from.
Yeah, we really do.
It's not like when we did the world's worst astronaut and there've been like whatever, a couple of hundred people in space ever.
Yeah.
We've got every day for about 13 billion years.
True. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. I imagine it's going to be days when Homo sapiens.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that they'd definitely have to put some restrictions down and say, what do we consider?
Yeah.
I sort of thought maybe written history was a good place to start.
That's
a
good, yes. And Felix picked this as a history student, first and foremost, before his acting career took off.
Yeah, back in the days when I wanted to be a world-famous classicist.
Yeah. Working in one of those big classics firms in the city.
Yeah. That's all I want. Classics firm with a gym, sauna.
Where did you get your degree from?
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, good. A good university.
Yes, the Athens of the North, as it is known.
As a classicist, I take. I think Athens would take issue with that.
No, Edinburgh is
you mean the Edinburgh of the South.
Yeah. Of course, Ireland is the Carthage of the West.
I believe.
Oh wow! Hey, we never won the Australian.
What's wrong with that? Carthage was good.
Yeah,
it got salted and destroyed and moved inland.
The really tricky thing for that is if there's ever an Irish Hannibal getting all the elephants to swim to Iceland. Using their trunks as periscopes to go through the North Sea.
I'd watch Irish Hannibal. That's a Netflix series.
Oh, Hannibal.
It's just the show Hannibal, but with an Irish cast. Yeah. Same scripts.
Yeah, same scripts. Set in Ireland. Yeah. Trying to cross mountains that aren't there.
No, you've got what I really want to see is Lincolnshire Hannibal. Just going over flat land with elephants.
Be much more successful.
Barry, it's your turn. What, in your opinion, is the worst day ever?
So I looked at a few dates, first of all. We're obviously doing the world's worst day, but some particular dates in history have a bad rep. November 22nd, 1963, the day that JFK was shot.
Mm-hmm.
Also the day of the deaths of C.S. Lewis and Aldous Huxley. Imagine, it's no. you know the way Farrah Fawcett's death got overshadowed slightly by Michael Jackson dying on the same day.
I did not know that.
Because Michael Jackson died, you see. And the reason you don't know when C.S. Lewis and Aldous Huxley died is because JFK died and got all the glory that day. April 15th, I knew this because as a Liverpool fan, I was aware of the date of the Hillsborough disaster, which is April 15th. And as a history student, I'm also aware that the Titanic finished sinking on April 15th, 1912. April 15th is also the date of the Boston Marathon bombings, of the death of Abraham Lincoln, who was shot the night before, the date of Black Friday in the UK in 1921, and the date of the first motor vehicle death in the UK in 1901. April 15th is also, coincidentally, as I say, Lincoln's death day and JFK's birthday.
That's bizarre.
Is it? Yeah, yeah. I looked at some massacres and then went, okay, well, some massacres took a while to take place. Yeah. Was there any massacre that specifically took place over the course of just a single day? Because famously, the first day of the Somme is called the bloodiest day in World War One, the 1st of July 1916, where there was basically a death every 5 seconds that day. It's like, that's insane.
Well, it's just because Bono travelled back in time and wouldn't stop clicking his fingers. incessant.
That's sadly a joke that was so good in the mid-noughties that over time is going to lose its power. It's like the ambassadors serving Ferrero Rocher gag. One of those jokes that we, from the generation we're from, will really always appreciate.
It's our man from Del Monte.
Yes.
It is. Oh, mate, I dropped a man from Del Monte gag on a gig on Friday night, and only about 50% of the room enjoyed it. I had a right old go at the millennials. That's what they're really ruining in society. Like, good 80s references.
So I read about something called the Asiatic Vespers. It took place in Asia Minor. and was coordinated all on one day in 88 BC. Uh-huh. Basically, King Mithridates VI of Pontus was the ruler of Asia Minor, and it was a Roman tributary state. Pontans were not particularly pleased with Roman domination and influence on society, and particularly Roman taxation at the time. He tapped into this, did old Mithridates, and arranged the murder of all Roman and Italic citizens in Asia Minor on this one day in 88 BC, which numbered, according to various sources, between 80,000 and 150,000 people in one day. Just the thing that makes me laugh is the amount of organisation that must have gone into that to make sure it was all in one day.
But how many people do you need to do the massacring for
that's
that?
The thing. You probably need
an equivalent. Is it one to one?
It's probably not. Yeah, it's what do you, how many people do you think you could kill in a day, Ben?
If they were lined up nice and easy and provided no resistance.
Yeah.
And I want a samurai sword, because that is, you know, you can cut through quite a few of them.
But let's assume it's not like Fruit Ninja. Yeah. They're not just being lobbed up for you. Let's assume you have to go door to door.
That's a lovely 2014 reference, pal. I enjoyed that. Oh, door to door is different, because obviously you've got to go knock on the door and they go, who is it? I'm like, Death Squad, not today, thank you.
Thank
we
you.
Had them yesterday. All right, and you've got to try and wheedle your way in. Because, I mean, if...
Knock, knock, who is it? Ocado. Oh, 2,000 years early, but sure. Yeah.
But also, presumably people are going to resist. People are going to fight back, so you want it to happen quite quickly.
Because obviously there's 86,000 seconds in a day, so if you've got 86,000 people to line up in a row, slam the samurai sword into person number one, and you just run all the way along the line, you're probably not going to get all the way through 86,000, because you can't
You'd have to stop and sharpen it again.
That's the thing, you need a lot of...
Or you do it as a relay. You get to a certain point, and then you pull out and someone else sticks their sword in and keeps going. Yeah, okay, we've solved it.
Because that first neck's going to slow it down.
Yeah, exactly.
Over time. Oh, going through the neck.
Oh, how are you doing?
Oh, I was going through the body. I was going through the soft tissue.
All those ribs.
No. Between the ribs and the pelvis.
So, spine? Mm. You've still got the spine.
I don't have to sever them. I'm not trying to cut them in two. I'm just trying to kill them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, fine.
That's it. You're the perfectionist, Felix, obviously. You want to go back and cauterize the wound later so they really take a long time dying.
I want to see a plan.
This is why.
I want to see some spreadsheets before we start this.
This is why you play an Undertaker, because you've thought about death a lot. This is before written history, so the last day of the Cretaceous period is probably not going to be allowed in. That's the day 65 million years ago when a massive asteroid hit planet Earth, creating the Chicxulub crater in Mexico, which is this massive dent in the Earth about 100 miles in diameter, which caused a big tsunami, red sky at night, not a delight for the dinosaurs. As all the dust flew up into the air and blocked out the sun.
But the newly evolved shepherds. We're going, this is great.
This is thrilling.
Last, our sheep
all we need now are
eaten.
Sheep to evolve. But it wiped out, this impact wiped out 75% of all species. 180 million years of evolution were gone in 20 to 30 years. In fact, quite a lot of the land-dwelling creatures probably died within hours. A couple of other days I found before I come to my suggestion was April 11th, 1954, the most boring day in history. It was a Sunday. This unfortunately named scientist called William Tunstall Pedo used a search engine. He developed a search engine called True Knowledge, where you could search for different days where things happened. And he basically ran it to find the day where nothing really interesting happened in history. He's sort of searching all of the internet for a day with very little happening. And it came up with April 11th, 1954, where nothing of note apparently happened apart from one notable birth, Abdullah Atalard, a Turkish academic. A footballer called Jack Shufflebottom died.
And it's the perfect name for someone dying on a day of no consequence.
I know, but they're the only two sort of births/deaths that appear to happen on this day. I mean, it sort of loses its kudos as a boring day by being an interestingly boring day,
I guess.
April 18th, another day in April 18th, 1930, was the day with no news on the BBC. Have you heard of that? This was Good Friday in 1930, and the 6:30 BBC radio news broadcast opened with, "Good evening, it is Good Friday, there is no news." And it was followed by piano music. Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Why was there no news?
There'd been some interview with the Home Secretary. The Home Office didn't really want going out. They didn't want this news breaking. And because it was Good Friday, all the newspapers had been printed early, so the only place they could get any sort of denial of anything into was the BBC radio broadcast, because there was obviously no real widespread television either. So they basically said to the BBC, there's just nothing happened today. We need nothing to be on the news. And the BBC went, yeah, that's fine. Here's some music instead. Some stuff did actually happen on the day. Wikipedia will tell you there was a typhoon in the Philippines and a small uprising in Bangladesh, and the actor Clive Revell was born. He's the voice of Emperor Palpatine in the hologram of the Emperor Palpatine in The Empire Strikes Back. Because in the original Empire Strikes Back, it's not Ian McDiarmid.
Because
he hadn't been hired yet. The hologram isn't him and the voice isn't him. It's this guy called Clive Revell doing the voice. The hologram...
I mean, that would have been an astonishing thing if they'd announced that on the news that day.
Yeah, the guy.
There is one piece of news, actually. You're not going to believe it. The future fictional Emperor of the Galaxy. Yeah. His voice has been born today.
It's not his image, though. This is completely off topic, but I read this. I could not tell you this. The hologram image in the original, not in the remastered, but the original Empire.
You're
going to
tell
back,
me it's David Prowse?
No. It's a makeup artist's wife. That they've put her in makeup and put this robe on her, and then they've superimposed the eyes of a chimpanzee onto it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Marvellous
so
trivia.
Worth knowing that fact about Clive Revell being born on a boring day just to get to there. My runner-up place for the world's worst day in history is the day of the Great Disappointment. October 22nd, 1844. If you were a follower of William Miller, a preacher in the 1800s, he had predicted that Jesus would return by early 1844. He was one of those people that said... The return of Christ will be sometime over the next year.
Yep.
He adjusted it a couple of times, and then one of his followers, a guy called Samuel Snow, used a different calendar and said, actually, it's October 22nd, 1844. That's the definitive day. Miller at this point had gone, I've maybe made a mistake, but Snow had gone, no, guys, Will had it right all along. It's October 22nd. He's gone, I've really made a mistake, guys, shut up. Stop setting a definitive date for this. When October 22nd came along, And Jesus didn't show up, as is his wont. The Millerites were really publicly taunted. There was violence against their churches in New York and Illinois and Toronto. Miller wrote to a friend of his saying, "Some people are tauntingly inquiring, 'Have you not yet gone up?'" Even little children in the streets are shouting continually to passers-by, "Have you got a ticket to go up?" The public prints of the most most fashionable and popular kind are caricaturing in the most shameful manner the white robes of the saints, the going up and the great day of burning. Even the pulpits are desecrated by the repetition of scandalous and false reports concerning the ascension robes, and priests are using their powers and pens to fill the catalogue of scoffing in the most scandalous periodicals of the day. So basically non-Millerite priests are going, But my world's worst day is February the 30th. Yeah, did you know there was a February the 30th?
No.
Yeah. So the Julian calendar, which people who have a bit of knowledge of history might know about, the Julian calendar was the calendar that most of Europe used for the first 1500 years or so of post-Christ history. And the Julian calendar set a year as 365 and a quarter days. Uh-huh. But that isn't exactly accurate. A year is 365 and a quarter days and 11 minutes and 14 seconds. So over, say, 1500 years, those 11 minutes and 14 seconds every year kind of add up a little bit. Till by the 1500s, the calendar was basically 11 days out. The church had set the date of the spring equinox as the 21st of March, but actually the astronomical spring equinox wasn't until 10 or 11 days later. So that meant Easter was out because the church calculated it's the first full moon after the vernal equinox. So it was just causing a lot of basically religious problems, and the church decided that they would drop some leap years and they'd skip 10 days to get the calendar back on track. So in 1582, Pope Gregory the 13th said, okay, from when we get to October the 5th, the next day is October the 15th. Cut out those days. And so over the next 250 years, the rest of Europe adopted this.
And also, when he said that, some people in Europe rioted because they thought that they'd had 10 days of their life stolen.
Yeah, they thought their lives would be 10 days shorter and all this. So it caused a lot of... It was not an immediate uptake. Other thing, he did give an exclusive contract to some Roman printer to print the new calendars and then rescinded it because he couldn't keep up with the demand for all the calendars and people.
Oh, is that a real thing? I thought you were being silly.
No, he did. He genuinely gave this guy a contract and the guy couldn't meet the demand.
It's the Catholic...
There's only one guy.
Yeah, one dude for all of Europe.
Need more. Yeah, and like in the early days of the printing press.
It's like one guy in Munich going, guys,
we need more paper, more trees. In Sweden, they didn't start adopting it until the 1700s.
Okay.
And in 1700, they decided, okay, we're going to switch over to the Gregorian calendar. But rather than doing it immediately and like cutting 11 days out, we're going to drop a leap year every 4 years for 40 years. So that meant that they would gradually be 10 days behind, and then 9 days behind, 9 days behind, and then 8 days. Over 40 years. So not only are they off with the rest of Europe, they're off by a different number of days for every 4 years. And so that was like, that's firstly is a terrible idea. But then, even worse, they administrated it so badly that in 1704 they forgot to drop the leap year. And in 1708 they forgot to drop the leap year as well. So they're still like, oh God, we're so far out. We're making such a mess of this. That, so in 1712, they decided, fuck it, let's just go back to the Julian calendar and we'll figure this out, a better way to do it. So in 1712, to claw back the days they had messed up, they had a February the 29th and a February the 30th. For that 1 year.
Only in Sweden.
Only in Sweden, that 1 year, just to get everything back on track. So not only is it a bad day because it's an example of terrible management by the Swedish government, it also, imagine being the person born on February the 30th and never having another birthday ever again.
This is completely overturning my view of the Swedes as coolly efficient administrators.
That's 1712. It wasn't until 1753 that they just did the whole thing of go, let's just cut 12 days and get ourselves in line again.
Just imagine being that person and having a passport with February the 30th, 1712.
Yeah. Well, presumably people died on that day as well. So presumably if you go to Sweden, you can hunt the tombstones with 30th
yeah,
of February.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
Amazing. Oh, or just if there is an afterlife and they turn up and just like, when did you die? February the 30th. I come on now.
Come on. Are you sure you're dead?
So mine is the 23rd of January, 1556. So a little bit of context for this. I was trying to find something that I think it's really easy when we talk about history from our point of view to really only look at it from our point of view, yeah, from be it a European or an Anglophone or Western or whatever you want, yeah, to call it.
So Googling worst day in history, you get so much 9/11.
Oh my God, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I was like, and so much of it is 20th, 21st century bad things happening in America.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, like, a bad thing can happen in America. That can be included. But I thought it needs to be a bad day in at least two continents.
Yeah, that's probably very, very egalitarian view of it.
But the difficulty is, it doesn't take too long going back in time before you get to places that just don't have a recorded history.
Yeah.
So anyway, so a little bit of context for what's going on around this time before I get to the headline, I suppose. Australia, the only thing they have for 1500 to 1700 is Indonesian trepang fishermen visit northern Australia.
Over the course of 200 years.
Yeah. A trepang is a kind of sea cucumber. So 1500 to 1700, terrible time for North Australian sea cucumbers.
The Indonesians had run out of their own sea cucumbers.
Indonesians are coming.
Can you imagine them now realising how denigrated the cucumber sandwiches, yeah, as like posh food. Back then it was just like
a sea cucumber,
yeah,
sandwich.
It was a massive industry for like good hardy fishermen who'd sail vast distances, and now it's the cricket watcher's favoured snack.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Australia. Outside of that, it's kind of driven by Europe and its colonialism, and it's really the first big drives towards colonialism. So the first inklings of Europe getting in on the slave trade.
Yeah.
So that's kicked off by the Portuguese in the 15th century. So over those 400 years or so of slave trade, that was about 25 million people.
Wow.
Who were left from Africa to the Americas.
Vast amount, isn't it?
Huge, huge amount. Things get better record-wise when we get to the Americas, again because of the Spanish. And really the story here is South America, so you've got 1500s in South America. It's awful, awful time for the indigenous tribes.
Yeah.
Far from the Europeans kind of coming over and going, here is culture, here is you moving on. It's much more correct to see it as interrupting the development of culture.
Yeah.
And that here were very advanced civilizations just cut down by influenza, smallpox, measles,
bit of musketry.
Yeah,
all of that.
Well, they're very, very odd advanced cultures. They had in the Aztecs and Incans that they had developed remarkably sophisticated infrastructure and mathematics, but no wheel.
Yeah.
and still...
You know what we need to use our wheels as? Calendars.
Yeah, yeah. Fair amount of cannibalism. I mean,
well, that's
battle cannibalism.
That was one of the big justifications. So one, it was in 1550, there was the very first debate about colonialism and whether or not we should be doing this.
Really?
Yeah, and it happened in Valladolid in Spain.
Amazing.
And it was between, on the one hand, you had people taking the point of view that indigenous people were God's people and we should all be treated the same.
Yeah.
And then you had the other side, which was a mixture of the church and governmental people saying, no, these people are cannibals, they're doing human sacrifice and all of that, so it is our duty to go in
and murder them all.
And murder. And
their barbarism is worse than our barbarism.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I know nothing about to what extent the cannibalism, the human sacrifice, to what extent that is in fact and to what extent that is in justification.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it's
yeah.
stories that come back again and again. You go back to, I guess there's like ancient Greek accounts of cannibalism happening in Germany and Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was certainly a lot of human sacrifice, if not cannibalism, which, we had horrendous medieval and early modern death penalties over here, but we didn't constantly murder our population so that the life force in their blood would make sure that the sun rose again, which was the logic behind why a lot of the death penalties existed
then. What are the Crusades but not human sacrifices of sorts? Right, we're going to kill these people in the name of God.
True.
Point for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend the Crusades.
Oh, I really hoped I was going to goad you into it.
Look, the only good thing the Crusades did...
Yes, Ben.
...was create the very engaging opening 10 minutes of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. As... historically inaccurate as surely it is, it is a lot of swash and buckle.
Nicely sidestepped.
Thanks, pal.
On a sidebar, a lot of swash and buckle is the pirate podcast I want to hear.
Yeah. Oh my God, let's just do that. That's our. Please tune in next week for our spin-off show. A lot of swash and buckle, and then, yeah, and then like the sidebar show to that is a little more swash and buckle.
Joe Brand presents.
Swash and buckle and extra buckle.
One more doubloon.
Pieces of nine.
Yeah. So the line I came across with North America was North America at this time is less advanced, which is a phrasing that I find a little bit iffy.
Yes.
Certainly the Brits and the French are turning up and they're starting to set down colonies. They are starting to establish trading relationships. But the first atrocity doesn't really happen until... 1585, which is Roanoke Island.
Oh, that's very, very restrained of us.
Very restrained of us. We were waiting to have a meeting, and then we ambushed them. But the line I found on the internet, which I loved, was, "The English strike first, using the ancient technique of treachery."
That's an Edmund Blackadder line right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Ancient technique, honed through generations. My father was a treacherer before me.
I like to think that that's like properly in the army manual.
Yeah.
Treachery.
Which is what we
day
don't
one.
Do first.
Showing your back.
Yeah.
Europe is having a lovely old time of it. But Catholicism is not having a lovely old time of it because we've got the Reformation, 1517. Yeah. 1517, to put that in context of the date I'm offering, 1556, that is 39 years. So that is the exact time between now and the election of Thatcher.
Okay.
So that's the kind of ripple effect the Reformation is having.
Yeah.
Possibly the man who's having the worst day at this time is Charles V. So this is
previously most powerful man in Europe.
Holy Roman Emperor from the age of 16, but also heir to the Spanish Empire. So this ties in what we were saying earlier, meaning that he is the man. He runs basically kind of Western Europe minus Britain and France. He's got a few Asian territories. That kind of South American stuff comes under his purview. He runs a lot of it out of the lowlands. He was big in Ghent and Brussels and all of that kind of place.
Yeah, not for long.
No.
No, they sort of get very displeased with him.
Absolutely.
You have to be very tall to be big in Ghent.
No, you just stand on something that's not going to sink and let everyone else go down into the swampland.
Into the polders.
But this is the year that he abdicates.
Ah, cool.
1556. He abdicated piecemeal. So he didn't just abdicate everything at once. I think Italy went first.
Right.
Then the lowlands went to someone else, and then his Spanish territories and all of that. And he abdicates because he spent 40 years defending his territories, and he is shattered to the point that he dies 2 years later in the Spanish monastery. And this man, Charles V, he had an enlarged lower jaw that kept growing throughout his life.
The Habsburg jaw, we've chatted about that before.
Have you now?
Yeah, yeah.
He had epilepsy, he had gout, and he died of malaria.
God. Also, he's going, I've lived far beyond the life expectancy for this period. What the fuck is wrong with me? Why won't I die?
But the big thing that's happening at this time, it's in China, and it's the Shaanxi earthquake, which happens on the 23rd of January, 1556. Estimated today at 8 on the Richter scale, goes up to, 9 on the Richter scale. So 9 happens 1 in every 10 to 50 years, and 8 happens once a year. 830,000 recorded deaths.
That's so many, isn't it?
Especially back in that time
So that's 520 miles that were flattened.
Yeah, yeah.
And in some counties, I don't know how many counties, that's up to 60% of the population.
So, yeah, I read something because a lot of people were living in caves.
Yes.
The Chinese had hollowed out, like, they were just buried beneath these mountains and things like that.
It's not the biggest earthquake. We've got bigger earthquakes, bigger floods and things as the China floods in July 1931, when up to 4 million people died.
Yeah.
And I thought that didn't really count because it was period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
We're looking for very much a specific day. You could make an argument for the Boxing Day tsunami, which comes up quite a lot.
Yeah, quarter of a million people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that, yeah, I guess in terms of amount of people in one single day, that earthquake is pretty... When I saw that, I thought that must be a mistake. It must be like 83,000 or something. But yeah, it wasn't the ferocity necessarily of the earthquake, how widely spread out it was.
So according to one account, mountains and rivers changed places in that earthquake. And he's living under the 12th Ming Emperor. This is the Zhaojing Emperor, who they tried to assassinate him in 1542 because the people who tried to assassinate him were his wives and mistresses.
Yeah.
He's so awful to them. Anyway, he eventually leaves the Forbidden City to shack up with his latest mistress, Lady Sheen, who is 13.
The daughter of Mr. Sheen.
But he...
that's so stupid.
So Ming Dynasty, this time of incredible administrative stability, he decided that he didn't want anything to do with it. He just came in, looked at all the paperwork and went, nah. That is not for me. So at the same time as this earthquake is going on, you've got an emperor who just cannot be fucked.
doesn't care about fire services or rescue services or people in it. And Shaanxi is not the most central province in China either, is it? It's quite away from from where the stuff is happening. Chinese emperor still going, nah, I'm going to play with my Lego. Or the Chinese equivalent of in 1556.
Might have been Lego. I mean,
probably they probably invented Lego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Invented potatoes.
They have rice. Is that not enough for them?
Apparently, potatoes is the thing they make fun of British people for.
What, in China?
Yeah.
I thought it was because we smelt of milk.
Oh, I've not heard that one. I heard the big stereotype is that we love potatoes.
I mean, that's so offensive to the Irish. Please be stereotyping us with our correct stereotypes.
I mean...
So we smell of milk.
Well, because milk's not part of the East Asian diet. Mm. And in the same way that if you go on a night on the sauce, then the next day you sweat out booze.
Okay.
If you spend a breakfast on the milk, then you... I'm on the milk. I mean, I have no idea that if Barry were to drink full fat, you would be on semi-skimmed and I was to be on skimmed, whether Barry would honk more of cow juice than either of us do.
Let's put that to the test over the next couple of months.
Brilliant. I'm well up for
that. We'll report back, listeners.
Yeah. You know, what is the worst day where the worst things have stacked up throughout history? January the 30th So, first of all, in 1607, a massive wave killed over 2,000 people in Britain. In Britain, there was a tsunami that killed people in Bristol.
Wow.
There was a freak wave that crashed up the Bristol Channel, swept over 200 square miles of Britain out to sea, killing an estimated 2,000 people. On the same day in 1649 and 1661... the Civil War very much kicked off and ended.
Really?
Yeah. In 1649, Parliament publicly beheaded Charles I. Now, obviously, as a royalist, that's good, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But as someone who both admires public stability and not froth-mouthed Puritanism, yeah, which is what Oliver Cromwell brought in, bad. And obviously, with an Irishman at the table.
Did you say as a monarchist, that's a good thing?
You definitely said as a royalist.
I think you mean a Republican.
I mean as a Republican.
Yeah. He's secret monarchist. He's as a monarchist with hair that looks like Charles I. I really, really didn't like him cramping my style. You very much look like a King Charles Spaniel.
Thanks very much. Let's hope that we don't try and reenact that.
Yeah, we're not going to take your head off. We've got our milk experiment to finish first.
When Cromwell eventually died, he died in 1658, but 3 years later, because he was so hated, his body was exhumed, hung in chains and beheaded.
On the same day?
On the same day.
Wow.
1835, the American president Andrew Jackson was nearly, but not quite, assassinated.
Ugh.
I know.
He's a shit one.
Yeah. January the 30th, also a terrible day for Ireland, because on January 13th, 1913, is when the British House of Lords rejected the Home Rule Act.
That's right.
Meaning that, again, you had to be looked after by the British Empire like the innocent savages that you were.
Well, the Home Rule Act was one of three that they sent up, basically because they had changed the way that Parliament worked, that the Lords couldn't just completely block something happening. So it was the third attempt at a Home Rule Bill. The Irish suddenly held the balance of power in Parliament. And so suddenly it was like, oh, Ireland, what do you want? And we're like, very much Home Rule, please, because we will keep voting down your budgets if you don't. And so they did it once, and the Lord said no. They did it twice this time in 1913, and then there was going to be another one in 1914, and then World War One started, and the whole Home Rule thing was shelved for a bit.
Right.
Basically, you know, the Irish got impatient with waiting and led to the risings and War of Independence. So if you'd just gotten round to passing it, we could have avoided a whole lot of nonsense.
If you'd have just been a little bit more patient.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Also on January the 30th, Hitler became Chancellor, admittedly in an election that was neither free nor fair, but it was an election. In 1943, on the Eastern Front, the Russian army surrendered in Stalingrad.
Oh, right.
And then 2 years later, there was a ship with 9,400 German civilians who were fleeing the Red Army's advance back the other way, and they were bombed by the British, and 10,000 of them died.
Oof.
Not the greatest moment of World War II for Team Ally.
Yeah.
Also, quite
hashtag Team Ally.
Hashtag Team Ally. hashtag we're better than the alternative.
Our barbarism's better than theirs.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I've been looking into Churchill because of the film Darkest Hour, which is a thinly veiled piece of pro-British propaganda.
Yes, yeah.
Because the more I learn about Churchill, it's just like, he was a eugenics-loving clusterfuck bastard, but he was slightly better than Hitler.
Yeah. Right, yes.
He was basically, what you need to defeat a lunatic like Hitler is a better lunatic, which is what Churchill was. Like, I love the fact that as soon as we won the war, the British people were like, no, let's put a Clement Attlee in charge. He can sort this shit out.
To catch a psychopath, we need a psychopath.
Yes. Gandhi was murdered on January the 30th. Also, on January 30th, 1948, Orville Wright died. It's just a bit sad that Orville Wright died.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King...
But he did fly right up to the sky, bless him.
There's a reference that'll partially baffle anyone who's not British.
Yeah, and baffle Felix.
Yeah.
No idea what you're talking about.
Bless you, don't know pop culture.
No, no.
Orville the Duck.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
he was the sidekick of the man from Del Monte. 1958, 10 years later, Martin Luther King's home was bombed in retaliation to the Montgomery bus boycott, which ran from 1956. And on the 50th anniversary of the bombing, his widow, Coretta Scott King, passed away, which is a horrible cyclical thing.
Yeah. So, wow, January the 30th sucks. I bet, I mean, every date in history probably sucks by now. We've stacked up a quite a track record.
No, of course you're,
but that's a pretty extensive list.
Yeah, you're listening to this and one of those is your birthday.
Yeah. January the 30th is the 2016 of days, as far as I can see.
So, ironically, January 30th, 2016, a nice day. All
yeah, it's very balmy.
I, with an R or an L. I had a brief look. I tried to look at who had the worst day as an individual person.
Oh, this is good.
Because obviously there's the guy, and I cannot remember his name, who survived Hiroshima and went for cover in Nagasaki.
Yeah, it was bombed 4 days later.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but find it hilarious.
He survived both of them, though. It's amazing.
And he lived to a ripe old age.
Yeah.
But the best...
Is that the secret?
That's it. In those interviews with old people, they go, I smoke 40 cigarettes a day and drink a glass of whiskey before bedtime. I went to the site of the first dropping of a nuclear bomb, then the second one, and I've lived to be 102. So
what's your secret? Nuclear radiation. Yeah.
It delivered in two very condensed doses over the course of 4 days.
Maybe it was the exact timing of it. With a blacksmith, you've got to strike at the exact moment of heat.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
yeah.
That was he just nailed when to get hit by nuclear bombs.
Or they are two massive coincidences, and actually those 2 days he was seeing two very good doctors. One in Hiroshima and one in Nagasaki, and they never get the credit.
The guy who I found, who I think had the worst day ever, there was, a few years ago, a German bank employee fell asleep at work, and he somehow managed to fall asleep in the middle of transferring funds with his finger resting on the number 2 key.
Oh,
and he accidentally sent a retired gentleman €222,222,222 euros and 222 cents.
And that old man died of a heart attack.
No, apparently the bank quickly identified the mistake and then changed it back. But obviously that guy will have looked at his account and gone, I'm rich, I'm poor.
Amazing. What happened to the employee?
Pretty certain he lost his job. Briefly, this, you talked about massacres. I looked at one that wasn't on one day, but was back in China in the 17th century. So there was a leader called Chang Xingsheng, who is nicknamed the Yellow Tiger, who led a peasant revolt in the Shaanxi province. And he conquered Sichuan, home of the delicious sauce.
That's all it's famous for.
Look, if Chinese people are going to boil us down to potato lovers, then I'm going to...
At least saute us down.
And this is a wonderful quote by a historian. He engaged in one of the most hair-raising genocides in imperial history.
What? Are your genocides not white-knuckle enough for you?
Yeah. But he, as well as killing people, he flayed them alive. He would insist that his troops chopped heads off and placed them in several big piles, with a pile of hands and a pile of ears and a pile of noses, so he could keep count of his killings, like someone keeping score on a Space Invaders machine.
And do some really gruesome kid songs. fingers, knees and toes.
What he eventually did is he cut off so many feet of so many women, including concubines, he would place them in size order so the concubines' feet were on top. And then the two piles of feet were then doused in oil and set alight to become what Xian Chung would call heavenly candles.
Ugh.
And it is estimated that he killed up to 1 million people during this massacre.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. In addition to that, people in that district suffered from a subsequent famine, epidemic and attacks by tigers.
Attacks by tigers? Sorry, is that not, that's not TAX by tigers? Because if a tiger comes asking for my income tax.
Yeah, may I have some tea? No, then I would like some tax instead.
Attacks by tigers. I don't know why, that's just such a brilliant little addendum to the whole thing.
Yeah,
we've had a flood, we've had a famine, we've had massacres by the humans. By the way, what's that coming over a hill? Oh, it's a horde of tigers.
Yeah.
Don't worry, tigers aren't really known for attacking humans unless they're... Oh, wait, hang on.
Yeah. There's a popular account of this gentleman's life where he erected a steel, which is like a giant sort of commemorative stone with an inscription on, with the following words written on it. Heaven brings forth innumerable things to nurture man. Man has nothing good to which to recompense heaven. Kill, 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 kill.
Oh my God.
And unfortunately, at the very same time he erected that, tigers had learned to read.
I've gone for the classic day, which we have to mention, which is the 28th of June, 1914. Because that is the day on which Gavrilo Princip killed Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
All because, as we learned in our World's Worst Driver episode, his driver took a wrong turn.
Yes, it has to be chosen because without that assassination, the rest of the 20th century as we know it doesn't happen. Mm. So you could say World War One was inevitable and there was a tinderbox and it was just waiting for a spark to kick off.
Mm.
But that's the day.
Yeah.
That's the day that kicks off World War One, and most historians now agree that World War One and World War Two were essentially part of the same thing.
Yeah.
Because the Germans go from being one of the most sophisticated and ambitious nations on Earth to having the humiliating Treaty of Versailles. My favourite fact about when they signed the Treaty of Versailles, it was signed in the same Hall of Mirrors in Versailles that in 1871 they had forced the French to sign a treaty after the Franco-Prussian War.
So the French really rubbed their face.
They were so French about it.
Yeah.
And obviously...
that's the rugby winger doing a can-can as he crosses the line, isn't it?
Well, against the Germans.
Yeah, maybe not.
Obviously, during the 20s, Germany gets ruined by hyperinflation, and then there's the moments of hope, and then there is another candidate for World's Worst Day, which is the day of the Wall Street crash.
Mm-hmm.
So that destroys Germany, Hitler rises to power.
Yeah.
Then you have...
helps exacerbate the problems in Russia as well.
Yes.
World War One.
Yes, absolutely. Of course it does.
Yeah.
Well pointed out.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's World War One is also sort of the death knell of empire, which leads to the poor decolonialization of the 50s, 60s, 70s, which leads to all sorts of horrible civil wars and despotic leaders and infrastructural ruination of countries around Africa and Asia, some of which have finally managed to sort themselves out, no thanks to us lot, but a lot of them are still in a fairly dreadful state because of the ramifications of that. And also, at the end of World War II, you have the Cold War, which led to decades and decades of appalling spy movies and very much set up the world into the sort of two dangerous blocks that they're in now and led to possibly the worst piece of complacency of the 1990s with Francis Fukuyama declaring the end of the Soviet Union as the end of history.
Yeah.
Someone needs to go back in a time-travelling device and slap him around the face with a wet fish and go, don't think so, mate.
Yeah.
And so much of the problems that we suffer now with a destabilised Middle East can be traced back to some of the political agreements that were put in place before 1914 or the carving up of the map after World War II. Some people who are inevitabilists, if that's a word, would say that all of that shit would have happened anyway and there would have just been another time to kill another minor European monarch to let it all kick off. But because Gavrilo Princip did it in that place on that day, and ultimately is the one man who was responsible for hundreds of millions of deaths, I'm going to pick the 28th of June, 1914. So, our choices are Barry's nomination of February the 30th, 1712, rather specifically in Sweden.
Yes.
Felix's suggestion of the 23rd of January 1556, which is topped by the Shaanxi earthquake, and my classic gilded walnut husk of a day, the 28th of June 1914, when Gavrilo Princip made the 20th century as we know it occur. Tough choices. I like the fact, Felix, that in yours, the world is essentially already on fire. Mine is, it might happen. Yours is, everything's an absolute mess. And then Mother Nature gets involved. I'm going to disqualify mine. I like mine, but we feel too close to it still.
Cliche. It's cliche.
It is. It's absolute cliche.
It's like picking Hitler as the world's worst human.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's between yours and Barry's, and I think I'm going to pick Barry's because it's so... so unique.
It's so good. Because it's so this podcast. That's what I thought about.
Yeah, because the thing with it is, the thing with Felix is it is the world's worst day for some people.
Sure.
If you're an Aztec or an Inca or a Carib or an Arawak, it's a bloody awful day. If you're a Protestant, actually pretty tricky because you're probably getting roasted. If you're Catholic, it's probably pretty bad. If you're Chinese, suffering an earthquake. But listen, there will be people like investors in earthquake hedge funds who are making an awful lot of money. There are like Spanish sailors with ships full of gold coins coming back over the Atlantic. Whereas Barry's Day, it fails as a day. Yes. And that's why it's the worst day, because it's not a day. Yes. We must speak about the world's worst news this week, and we go to Al Rumhaya in Saudi Arabia, because in Saudi Arabia they will regularly have camel races and camel beauty contests.
Oh, yes.
And a dozen camels have been disqualified this week because their handlers have used Botox to make them more handsome. A chief judge has described the camel as a symbol of Saudi Arabia, and these men who have injected Botox into them are mocking our national identity.
They skipped hump day.
So, yeah.
What's the prize in a camel beauty contest?
What camel.
Another camel.
Yeah, a lot of lipstick and a spittoon.
Imagine getting that being the chance card you turn over in Monopoly. You have won second prize in a camel beauty contest. Receive another camel as a mate for the night.
No, receive $400 billion in oil revenues from the Saudi royal family. The combined purse, to put this into perspective, the combined purses of every race and show competition there is 213 million reals, or $57 million. Jeez. So there's a lot of money in camel racing and camel
beating. What are we doing
here? Yeah, good point.
Drinking this milk, that's what we're doing, guys. We're breaking bounds of science.
Have you ever had camel's milk? I've never had like a glass of camel's milk, but I've had camel's milk chocolate.
Ben, swallow it properly, please.
Yes. Camel's milk
No,
I've had camel's milk chocolate from Saudi that someone brought back to for me.
Wow.
Yeah, really rich. I've had camel's milk like yogurt in Morocco that they do on pancakes with honey. That's lovely.
Yeah,
it's just like have some milk and yogurt and things, but with three times as much fat.
I think I've only just, apart from, you know, goats and sheep's cheeses, I think I've stuck to cow's milk pretty much since I gave up the human milk.
Also,
I've been sober these 30 years, guys.
Yeah, don't fall off the wagon now. It'll really baffle your mum. Before we go, Felix, where can people find you in the wide world, and what can they find you doing there?
They can find me, I'm at Felix Trench on Twitter, and in the wide world I'm doing a storytelling show first week of March at Vault called Felix Trench's Multi-Story Car Park.
Lovely. Yes, at the Vault Festival here in London. If you are an arts person, you'll probably be aware of it. If you aren't, it's an amazing festival. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's running from now until early March.
Yeah, it's down in Waterloo. There's actually a couple of people who've already been on the podcast who are on it.
And you've also got Wooden Overcoats are doing live shows.
Oh yes, I should.
The end of this week on the Friday, February 23rd at King's Place, and then every couple of weeks for the next wee while as well.
So 23rd of Feb and then every 2 weeks.
Smashing stuff. We're all off to go to Clinton Cards and pitch them a happy February the 30th card. Until next time, bye bye.
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 Thank you very much to Felix for being our guest this week. What a fantastic guest. What a fantastic episode full of weirdness. So if you liked listening to Felix this week, well, you should definitely check out the wonderful Wooden Overcoats, the podcast sitcom that he appears on. It's about rival funeral homes in the Channel Islands, and he's fantastic in it. It's very funny. They're doing some live shows coming up. Just look up Good Wooden Overcoats online and you'll find out all about that. And subscribe to their podcast right now. Go do it right now. I'll wait. It's fine. Done? Good. Hi. Welcome back. It's just me this week. Ben is busy gigging around the country. So I'm just going to very quickly ask you to do the usual admin stuff. Please give us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us on. We'd love you to just click that little 5 stars. It really, really helps, like you wouldn't believe. If you could spend a minute, maybe even writing a little review, tell people just how fabulous you think both of us are. Or just tell people how fabulous you think I am and that Ben's all right too. We'd settle for that. We also are, as ever, on Twitter at WorstFoot. We've been tweeting out loads of facts and fun things from previous episodes. So if you haven't already followed us there, do, and you'll
get little bits of worst foot trivia and stuff delivered to your timeline at intermittent periods throughout the week. Find us on Facebook, Worst Foot Forward, and send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com if you want to suggest any guests or topics or ideas for stuff we could do in future episodes. Speaking of future episodes, next week's show is with a great guest. Oh my days, it's so nerd-tastic. Strap in. If you are a fan of the Festival of the Spoken Nerd, you will know who Helen Arney is. If you don't know their stuff, do check them out. They've got videos, audio stuff, live shows. Helen Arney is our guest. She's one of the nerds of Festival of the Spoken Nerd. And they've recently written a book all about elements. So what better topic to do than the world's worst element? So that's coming up next week. It's going to be full of science, explosions, and half-lives to beat the band. So tune in next week for another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com. Thank you.